The Disciplined Investor is underwritten by Interactive Brokers. Savvy investors use Portfolio Analyst to create a consolidated view of their finances and check the health of their complete financial portfolio. Sign up for free at PortfolioAnalyst.com. This episode is also brought to you by Masterworks. Masterworks.io is making investing in art as easy as buying stocks online at a fraction of the cost.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Good news! Emergency use authorization is granted. Stocks finish lower this week and Bitcoin gets blasted. We have one extra week for government funding and lessons from my grandfathers. All this and much more on episode number 692 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, a very good day to you, and welcome to another packed episode of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. I'm Andrew Horowitz, and I'm your host. I'm also the president and founder of Horowitz & Company, and we work with people just like you, planning their investments, planning their future, making sure that everything is set to go so that you are financially secure down the road. Now, I want to make sure you remember something. We only have a couple of more weeks to take me up on that free book offer for starting a new Investology account or adding $10,000 more to an existing account. More information on that is on the show notes for this episode, episode number 692, over on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. So, what do we got going on? Well, we got big news. We got exciting news. We got great news because we have not only on the heels of the announcement in the UK that there is emergency use authorization that was approved for the Pfizer vaccine. We got it this weekend here in the US, and shipments and deliveries for the first batch and the tranche of what is going to be hopefully a cure, an end, will start rolling out this week. I mean, it's still in the early phases, obviously, and it's interesting because the closer we got to this whole idea of having a vaccine, it seems that the more skepticism has grown that, well, I don't know if I'm going to take that vaccine because it was done at warp speed. And did it get all the proper vetting and approval process? Did they cut corners? And what's going on with this? And we're starting to hear more and more about that. And it's not necessarily all the anti-vaxxers that are out there, but it's people that are just saying, you know what? I'm nervous about this thing. It came out too fast. Even hearing some people in areas around the country saying, you know what, I don't know if this is going to be good for us, and maybe they're targeting something bad, and that's what's in the vaccine. I've even heard some crazy stories about people thinking that there's going to be trackers, like geo-trackers, that are going to be inserted into your body through this vaccine process. So I don't know. I guess this whole pandemic has brought out really some crazy ideas on a lot of this, but let's just hope that this is a start of a new chapter in our lives and we can get rid of this and go back to whatever normal was and whatever normal will be in the future. Now, even with the fact that we have this approval for this emergency use authorization, which will only be used for people that are over 16 years old, specifically for first line and medical personnel that need it, and some of the elderly that are very susceptible. We're seeing that obviously more shutdowns are happening as states are seeing a very significant uptick in cases. And we're seeing that hospitalizations are on the rise, and we're seeing that daily records of deaths are being pronounced all over the media, right? You see that everywhere. And we're seeing that New York just announced that starting, I think, Monday, that they're closing all restaurants and bars that have indoor seating. I guess you can still have outdoor seating, but now it's getting a little cold in New York. Miami, on the other side of the north-south range, put on a curfew overnight from 12 a.m. to 6 a.m., I believe it is. Maybe it's 5 a.m. until further notice. So we're not out of the woods yet, it seems. Now, I don't even want to get into the discussion of what the curfew has to do with and why the virus is more active after midnight versus the daytime. It makes no sense to me. Maybe it's the bars and all that, but if it's the bars that you're concerned about, maybe you should think about closing them because people can still go to the bars till midnight. That doesn't mean that COVID is not able to be transferred. I don't know. The whole thing, it just doesn't make any sense. But one thing we do know when it comes to markets, regardless of where we are with this whole pandemic, is that speculation is still pretty healthy. Even without the stimulus plan that is hopefully, I don't know, it's going to go through the whole process and the sausage-making factory for some time more. But even with all that's going on with the back and forth on this, we're seeing that there is an unyielding appetite that has been showing up on a regular basis. And all we have to do to kind of look at that and to figure out where that is and to kind of, okay, well, what are you talking about, Horowitz? Well, just look at the IPOs this week. We had two major IPOs. It was actually a few more, but two major headline IPOs that were front and center. They're right in the spotlight. Everybody was looking at them. It was all over the news. We had Airbnb and we had DoorDash. DoorDash first, then Airbnb. They doubled each of them right out of the gate, pretty much. And this is as these deals that when they were being priced were upsized and then repriced again well above their original price. I mean, I think Airbnb went from a valuation that pretty much tripled from its March low. It doubled from the day before when the sponsors of the IPOs and the syndicates that were putting it out there, the Goldmans, the Merrills, and whoever else was involved in this, it doubled. In other words, they called it totally wrong. They themselves couldn't believe the pent-up demand for these kind of deals. Whether or not they make money or not is a totally different story. Not even being discussed. Just drive the stock price up, shove money into it, and let's see how the chips fall from there. The whole idea and what's happening with the market right now in terms of this speculative fever is it doesn't really matter whether or not they're profitable today. Let's look 5 years down the run. You know, kind of like what you see private equity do. It's like, all right, well, maybe they're not profitable, but we could do a lot of things within the company to make it profitable and then put it on the market sometime in the future and really get a significant uptick in overall valuation sometime down the road, 5-10 years. I think that speculative fever is investors believing that somewhere down the road there's going to be a significant increase in the valuation and the potential, as they say, the path to profitability. Now, Uber Eats and Grubhub never really had major profitability. So where DoorDash is going to come in at this point in a pretty, I would say, healthy environment for their particular services, how they're going to be much more profitable in years to come doesn't really sit well, square, if you will. But what is all this telling us, really, when we think about this speculation that's going on? I think what we have to recognize right now is that there is still a tremendous amount of money that wants to be invested. Even with all the excess in terms of inventory coming to the markets, right? We call it inventory when we see all this money through or shares come out through IPOs and possibly even secondaries, but all the inventory that's coming to markets, we still have these one-day pops that are absolutely stunning. Now, these are not penny stocks. These are not these extremely illiquid positions that somehow have a news and the shorts get squeezed. There's no shorts on these at this point going into this. There's no shorts to squeeze. They're fresh on the markets. And they come out and they're doubled up over their IPO offer. So indications of interest on the out, on the gate, shoot, open the door, horses out, bang. They're hitting them hard. These are multi-billion dollar deals at extremely high prices. So again, not your penny stock nonsense. So some have asked the whole question, right? Where's all this money coming from? What is going on? I've gotten a bunch of emails on this whole thing. But it's pretty easy to, I think, understand, because if we understand what we've been talking about for months here, we have retail that's in on it now, we have institutions, and we have sovereigns, and money is pretty cheap. And in some cases, pretty much free. Right? You have sovereigns that are creating money from central banks. They get money to spend through bond issuance, relatively free, or sometimes at negative interest rates, even in that. And they're taking it in their sovereign wealth funds and they're investing it. Where are they investing it? Well, we know for a fact that Airbnb and some of these other names had significant amounts of sovereign wealth funds invested in them. So as we have central banks and governments pretty much telling us that, and maybe not just telling us, training us that they have our backs in a time when money is cheap. I mean, if you know where to look, there's very inexpensive money as an investor, which brings me to an important discussion, by the way. Because I've told you over the years that we use Interactive Brokers as one of our brokerage platforms for clients, right? I mean, we talked about that, and I've mentioned that, you know about that. And they're now sponsoring the show. And I thought that it would be in your interest and in line with this particular discussion to let you know that Interactive Brokers charges margin rates of like 0.75 to 1.59%. That's cheap. And as a client, you could also earn extra money and income by lending your fully paid shares of the stock. Now, if that's something you want to do, you can join Interactive Brokers clients from, they have like people all over the world, 200 countries plus and territories all over the world that invest in stocks and options, futures, funds, bonds, all globally. By basically minimizing your costs to maximize your returns, right? Now, the rates are subject to change on the margin rates, but think about that, right? This is an area where money is inexpensive. And investors like you can get that kind of funding on margin and loans, and obviously understand the risk by going over to ibkr.com/YIB. That's important. We'll have the links again on the show notes. But this is part of what is helping investors get money to put into deals. So go check it out, ibkr.com/YIB. So as investors are able to access cheap money, there's still heaps of money also on the sidelines. And it's keeping the market fever going. It's kind of pressing the edges. So this is kind of a direct answer to many of the emails that I received asking the question, what's driving the markets? And I think it's relatively easy to understand when you understand, you really understand the construct of what is being presented from stimulus and central bank cheap money and inexpensive ways to access it. And also the other thing is there's this whole carrot and stick that's going on. We see that on a regular basis daily right now, that we've seen government put out that carrot on a relatively long stick that's getting shorter and shorter by the day about stimulus. So we have stimulus, cheap rates, the potential for a vaccine. All of these are coming together to create kind of a, I guess, a Goldilocks moment, kind of this Goldilocks period of time where everything's kind of just right. So I was kind of thinking, as again, many of you have written me and asked these questions, and I'm kind of trying to really present these back to you with some of this background. The question of what could change all of this? I mean, could there be this sell the news downstroke that can happen on any of the items that we laid out here? I mean, we have the FOMC meeting and the rate decision coming up next week. Could something change there about how they're discussing rates. You know, they talked about how they're not thinking about raising rates for some time. 2023 is what their number is. They're doing quite a bit of bond buying and quantitative easing and all this funny stuff that they do to try to put from money from right pocket to left pocket to try to get us to believe that there's a lot more liquidity in the system. And also at the same time, actually pumping money into bonds. I mean, they're pumping money into major areas of municipalities and corporates and government bonds. So what could change the course? Could they say something, do something? Well, probably not. I mean, let's be honest. They don't seem to be taking their foot off the pedal for any reason. They want to get inflation up, which is very stubborn, even though we saw some little inklings over the last couple of months about some inflation starting to kind of peek through. When you look at the totality of the numbers that the Fed is looking at, there's no inflation to really speak of. Employment, the secondary or first mandate, really, of the Fed, well, it's not anywhere near the numbers where they have our true level of appropriate employment. So therefore, nothing is probably going to change there. Well, what about the news about the vaccine? And probably we may even see one more approval next week. I think the Moderna is probably next in line. And while they may drag their feet a little bit right now because they got the Pfizer deal done, at least that's out there. At least we have that floating around, the distribution starting, and they may do a little further tinkering and looking at the Moderna deal and that particular vaccine. I think that is something else. Could we see a sell the news on that? Because it's like, okay, finally we got it. Let's take a breath. And now we can move on. But now what? What else do we have to look forward to? Because it's kind of like the anticipation of getting that present and then opening up and it's like, oh, I have it now. There's no more of that excitement left once you open the box, put it on, use it, whatever it is. It's kind of like beyond that whole sell the news concept. So now that we have some merit as the leaders that push the markets and these pandemic plays that we're moving up, is it possible that we're going to see a rotation like we already started to see and kind of some of the leadership that was really pushing the markets and helping markets kind of fade? That's something to think about. Or could it be that once the stimulus bill is approved, that carrot has been exhausted? We're no longer dealing with that anticipation. We know what it is right now, and then what else could happen in the future? Well, they're probably not going to be a lot brought up for some time, at least into mid to late January, maybe February. And so right now, there's kind of nothing else. No more Christmas presents. We opened them all up. But then again, I was thinking, does it really matter? Why do so many always look for the proverbial shoe to fall, right? That whole concept of, you know, it's good, it's good, it's good, but something bad's going to happen. Instead of looking at really what's right there in front of them. Taking the opportunity with what is happening now. In other words, being in it to win it. I've been thinking about that. And I was wondering why that was. I mean, why is so many people always wondering about, hey, you know what? It's so good. It can't last. I'm not investing. I'm not putting my money in the markets. I'm not investing in that stock. I mean, how many opportunities have really been lost by that mentality? If I'm talking directly to you and you're thinking, oh, that could be me, what is it that is preventing you from playing along? Because is there any difference from losing money if you invest it to not making that money and then backing up and losing just some of it, but actually coming out ahead in the long haul? So again, I was thinking about this. I was thinking about what is it that does that to some people? And I was thinking it was a matter of possibly deep-rooted the past, your upbringing, and lessons that we learned along the way. And I wanted to talk to you today about two influences on my life and see if it can jar you to think about your preconceived notions and what you may be holding onto and what maybe is holding you back from big successes and really investing in a way to help you in your financial security in the future. I also want to do a quick recap of the week with markets and what we have coming next week, because it's a pretty big calendar from the aspect of economics, which may or may not matter. But speaking about the markets, I wanted to, we know that there is some excess, I guess that's the best, froth. This is from froth in the market. And you know, froth is great on top of your pumpkin spice latte. It's not great in your investment portfolio. If you've been watching the stock market lately, there's been enough froth to fill a stadium of venti macchiatos, right? The S&P is trading over, 22 times forward earnings. The top six tech stocks make up about 20% of the S&P 500 when you consider even adding Tesla in there. It's not great if you're, if you're looking for any kind of diversification. And bonds aren't any better. Listen, because of low interest rates, 97% of bonds are now yielding less than 5%. And the average savings account returns just a half a percent? If that. So the question is, how do you avoid the froth while preserving your net worth? Well, you can listen to the professionals. According to Deloitte, 86% of wealth managers recommend investing in art. In fact, blue chip art outperformed the S&P by 180% from 2000 to 2018 with almost no correlation to the stock market. The art market is projected to grow from $1.7 trillion to $2.6 trillion by 2026 for a reason. The ultra-wealthy continue to invest in art to preserve their wealth and earn attractive returns. But unless you have an extra, $10 million or so to buy a painting, you've been out of luck in the past until now. Masterworks.io is the only platform that lets you invest in art from artists like Banksy. And Masterworks.io is making investing in art as easy as buying stocks online at a fraction of the cost. Just recently, Masterworks.io sold their first Banksy masterpiece for a 32% return, double the S&P over the same period of time. So with the Fed injecting money into the economy at a staggering rate, sophisticated investors are allocating a portion of their portfolio to hard money assets like art to hedge against inflation. Due to the recent demand, the wait list to invest in Masterworks.io is over 20,000 deep. But TDI listeners can skip the waitlist by going to masterworks.io and entering in the promo code TDI. Again, that's masterworks.io, promo code TDI. See important information at masterworks.io/disclaimer. So at the top of the show, I wanted to tell you a little bit about some lessons that I learned, and specifically from my grandparents. So indulge me for a minute. Growing up, I had four great-grandparents that I knew. I knew them well, and I also had four grandparents. I knew them well. And each of them were influences on my life in one way or another, right? And I'm sure that your parents and other relatives were the same for you. I mean, obviously, right? But in particular, I wanted to focus on some lessons that I could bring to you to answer the question that we started with, which was this whole idea of, what's holding me back? Why am I waiting for maybe the shoe to drop and not doing what I should be doing? And what are those preconceived notions that I'm bringing to the table, that baggage that's holding me back? And I kind of wanted to go through these lessons that I learned and look at some of the sides of them, because I want you to do the same thing if you could think about them. But I want to talk about two of my grandparents and my grandfathers in particular. This is, as we call them, and I call them, Papa Freddie and Papa Milton. Now, these are totally different personalities, totally different people from, I would say, somewhat similar backgrounds in terms of where they live, where they grow up, where they were born. Both were really well educated. Papa Freddie had a PhD and was a chemical engineer. Papa Milton was an attorney. All right, so kind of setting the stage for who they are. Now, Papa Freddie was well-traveled. He visited far-off lands. Remember, I'm telling you this as a kid. Look it up, right? So he visited these far-off lands, and he told us these great tales and stories about all sorts of dinners he had in Japan and visits to Europe on his business trips. He had an amazing sense of humor. He was the life of the party, provided endless hours of stories about one thing or another and the center of attention pretty much at every gathering, whether it's a social gathering or a family gathering or wherever it may be. Now, on the other side, it was Papa Milton. Now, Papa Milton, he was well-read. He spent the mornings reading various newspapers from cover to cover. Right, get the picture here. Sitting in a chair, reading these newspapers. He was that guy who would fold the newspapers perfectly into these very small, like, quadrants to specifically read story by story and then turn it, unfold it, refold it. I mean, if you think about that, right, he had these, always had these black fingertips from the folding process, from the ink that came off of the newspapers. Very intricate, almost like a paper folding process. But the relationship with the two of them couldn't be more different. Now, first, the setup. Papa Milton's house was always open, always welcoming. In fact, I remember that any time of day that I would go over there, or night, it doesn't have to be any time of day or night that I would go over there, the door was always open. Like, it was kind of weird, like they were expecting me or something. It's kind of crazy. And in fact, it gets even weirder. Because no matter what time that I would show up, there always seemed to be a hot plate of food on the table for me. No matter when I came, somehow Nana Goldie, Papa Milton's wife, my grandmother, would kind of have this magical sense that I was kind of in the area, I guess, even if I didn't call. And this incredible ability to have a full plate hot food, even if I came over without any notice. From the time I knocked on the door to the time I walked into the kitchen, somehow there was a setting for me and a plate ready to go with some of my favorite foods, the stuffed cabbages, the chopped liver, you know, whatever it was, a bowl of soup. Voila, food. It was like, how is this happening? Now, on the other hand, a surprise visit to Papa Freddy's house, it was not the best idea. In fact, I remember as a kid, I would think that I would need an appointment to actually see them. Planned well in advance, before even thinking about going over. There was this one time that I remember sticks with me, that I was near their house and I called and I said, listen, hey, I'm really close to your, I was 17 years old, driving from place to place. I said, I'm near the area. I thought I'd stop by and say hi. And I was told that, well, you know what? It maybe another time. They're getting ready to put in dinner on the table. I'm like, putting dinner on the table? I mean, at Papa Milton's house, they'd have dinner and they'd say, come in. And they would, and Papa Freddy's like, no, we're having dinner. Don't come by. You get the point. Now, let me give you a little bit more here. Let me get to the guts of some of this. Papa Freddy once told me that if I was to fly on a plane to always sit in first class, I was like, huh? How am I gonna afford that? It seemed like a kind of expensive proposition for me, but he said it was the best way to meet other people that were successful and could advance my career. It's kind of when I was in my 20s, I guess. I thought about this and can tell you how I relate to the story today. Not that I sit in first class all the time and really took that particular thing. Oh, I sit there sometimes, especially when I was younger, I never sat in first class. But the lesson I got out of this is that we need to be in it to win it. You hear me talk about that a lot. I say it a lot. I talk about it a lot. You have to be in the game. There's no standing on the sidelines really possible. And again, we're talking about investing. We're talking about portfolios. We're talking about your future. We're talking about your financial stability. You have to be in the game. And when it comes to investing, you have to have access to the opportunities, or at least be near them, or at least be aware of them. You at the very least have to have a brokerage account open and be ready if something comes along. I'm not talking about day trading or particularly swinging or scalping. I'm talking about, you know, if you find something after you do the due diligence and research, or if you believe that, you know what, aha, that light bulb goes off, that, you know what, I need to be invested in this particular area or that. You can't do it unless you have a ready access to get it done. And obviously you need a brokerage account. Okay, fine. It's okay if you have some cash in that account for some time. and you're really not investing. But if you're sitting in the back with no plan and not ready, with no proximity to the potential, how can you ever succeed? A lot of you listen, you think about all these bad things that can happen. So you know what? You sit on the outside, in the back, in the sidelines. You're outside the stadium, for goodness sakes. But the only way you could win the game is to actually be an active participant in it with proximity to the opportunities. And if you don't give yourself that opportunity, even maybe if you're not in first class, but you're towards the front, again, we're using this as kind of an example. You have to be there. Sometimes just, again, being near the action can help. Maybe you don't have to be necessarily always there. And I'm talking about planes, obviously. We're not flying these days as much. But you know what? You have to be on a plane. Think about when things were pre or post-pandemic. Think about being on a plane. That's going to get you to a destination. You can't get anywhere unless you get going. You have a map, maybe if you're driving. The lesson I learned from this in my current life is that I have to be a part of it. At least part of me has to be close to where success lies in order to have the opportunity. It's not going to come to me. I have to go to it. It's not magically going to appear in your portfolio unless you do the research, unless you do the work, unless you are aligned with the people and the knowledge that can get you there, and then act on it. It's one thing if I'm sitting next to someone on a plane who maybe is the CEO of a major corporation looking for someone just like me to do a certain job and advance my career. And unless I do something like, hello, let me introduce myself. Could you pass the peanuts? I don't know, whatever it is, right? Unless I make it happen, it's not going to happen. Unless you actively go out and make it happen, it's not going to happen. It's not going to come to me. I have to go to it. I have to do the research. I have to make the decision. And I have to pull the trigger. Now, again, hopefully this is giving you a little bit of insight. I want to switch over now to Papa Milton. Now, he was an interesting fellow too, quite different. This is a gent that later on in his life continued to work as an attorney. And oftentimes he would do things for people pretty much at no charge because he just wanted to help. He was really conscientious in his work, really conscientious. He's also a creature of habit. He had rules. I was thinking about this one time that I was sleeping over his house. I was young and I woke up and there was Papa Milton. He was putting on his trousers. He was putting on his shirt. He was fiddling with his tie to get that just that perfect knot. Put on all of his clothes, and then he put on these really well-shined shoes and a sweater. And I asked him, I said, Papa, what are you doing? He said he was getting ready for work. Well, we went downstairs, and we had breakfast together. Remember, in this house, Nana Goldie always had a hot meal waiting, ready to go. It was there. It just appeared. And then after breakfast, he got up, he said he was off to work. Picked up his suitcase, and he proceeded to walk upstairs. I was up there a while, and eventually I was wondering, well, what is he doing? So I went upstairs. And I went upstairs and looked around, and I saw him there sitting in a room. It was a second room. It had a desk, it had a phone, it had one of those old-fashioned calculators with, you pull the handle, and I don't think it was called a calculator at the time, but adding machine, I think it was called an adding machine. You pull the handle, and the paper would come out, and you'd see the history of what you added, subtracted, etc. And stacks of files were all over his desk. I'm trying to kind of give you the full picture of this. I asked him, I said, Papa, I thought you were going to work. He said, I am. I'm at work. And I said to him, you know, Papa, if you work from home and from the house, why do you get all dressed up? Well, he said he felt that if he was working, he had to put on his work clothes. And it didn't matter where his office was. He had to put on the clothes and look the part to feel like he was doing that job. And that really stuck with me. And Papa Milton was also kind of a little OCD. I remember when he would go out and we would drive. He would take us somewhere, I don't know, restaurant or somewhere. He was a terrible driver, by the way. And he would drive the car and we'd park. And usually we'd do like a parallel park or something like that. The streets of New York, you'd park somewhere. And he had kind of a ritual, kind of a strange ritual. But what he would do is that he would park the car and then try his best to get the car a bit closer to the curb. Kind of nestle in there, I guess. And then finally, he would shut off the engine, right? He would look to me and he'd say, or my father, if we were with my father, he'd say, hey, Barry, hey, Andrew, do you think I'm close enough to the curb? It looks like you are. Okay. We got out of the car, and then he would invariably circle back to the car and look closely at the distance from the tires to the curb and ask again, do you think I'm close enough to the curb? Usually he'd be satisfied. Sometimes not. He would go and kind of work the car a little bit closer to the curb that, ratio of tire, this distance ratio, I guess we'd call it, the tire to the curb. But then he would walk back from the car, we'd walk and he'd be satisfied. We'd walk a few feet and he would invariably stop again and he asked the question, do you guys remember if I locked the car? I'm like, oh, you know, we know this is happening every time we go. It's the same routine. I don't know. We think you walked, we did, but you know what? Just so you feel good, because if we forced him to keep walking, the entire dinner he'd be wondering if he locked the car. So he'd go back and he'd check the doors and he'd look another look at the car and that curb to tire distance ratio and he'd lock and then feel satisfied. And then we were off and everything was fine. Now, here's what I got from these two lessons from Milton, Papa Milton. When you're working, you're working. This is first and foremost, first lesson. When you're working, you're working. And that takes on different parameters for different people. What does it mean to work? But come to the table ready. And come to the table in work mode. And be purposeful. Be intentional. And act the part. And we could take this to mean that when we are doing our research on stocks and funds or just portfolios, we can take it seriously and need to take it seriously and do it with focus. Because I want you to carve out time that is specific for this activity and remove anything that may be an obstacle to your deliberate and direct attention to what you're doing. This is serious business. You make all this money, you put it in an investment, and you know what? Then you're just going to buy a target fund in your 401k? Are you kidding me? You're just going to throw it because somebody on TV says, hey, this stock looks like it's going up, and you're just going to throw your hard-earned money into that and not do the research, whether it's fundamental or technical or some other background understanding of what this company is all about and how it can impact you, what the risk factors are. I mean, come on. We know better than that. We want to be deliberate. We want to have direct attention. We want to act the part of seriously considering what we are doing. This is not a game just to throw your money and hope for the best. We always talk about that hope is not a religion that we impart into our finances. So you come to the table to work, you come in work mode, whether or not you put on a suit and all that and a sweater is totally up to you, but you're going to be purposeful, you're going to be intentional, and you're going to act the part of what you're doing. Second lesson. While this card checking thing was kind of over the top, my takeaway was to never be too confident. Check and recheck your work. I wanted to ask others for their input and see if maybe you're missing something. There's always more than one way to look at one aspect of the analysis or another. That's why we have people with price targets on a company of 100, some with price targets at 40. There's always different ways to see the same information and how it then really appears in the future. So just like this rechecking to make sure the car is locked, even If you're sold on an idea and you're pretty confident that, yeah, maybe just a quick recheck of the thesis, right? Just going back and checking again on what were my baseline inputs into this decision? And why am I doing what I'm doing? I mean, who knows? Maybe you missed something. Or maybe you think that you're wrong about something, but maybe in fact you're right. Fact is, we all come into this area of investing with preconceived notions. We have baggage from different things in our lives. There's lessons that we learn from different people, from different places, from the schooling, from the education, from our friends, from colleagues. We have all of this that comes into play. And on top of it, we have our own emotions and fears that go into it that really screw things up. On top of all that we're doing, we have on top of it irrational ideas that then kind of skew everything that we're doing. So we have to ask ourselves, what are we bringing to the decision-making process? And this is an end-of-year kind of discussion where we're really reflecting and going deep into what it is that makes us tick and how we make our decisions from an investing standpoint. And again, because it's all so important about the financial future. And if, in fact, that you can't make that decision on your own, this is exactly why there are financial advisors out there. This is what we do, but go out and find yourself somebody to work with that you could trust, you could work with, and find that will help you get there if you're unable to do so because of the fact that you are blocked by 10,000 pounds of baggage before you can make your first decision. Now, just for a moment, consider that some of the ideas that you have are just wrong. These ideas and notions that you have. For example, I had a client for many years and many years ago, and within the past 5 years passed away. She never wanted to invest in anything that had the word international or global on it. She felt it was too risky. And I would talk to her a lot about this. You know, what is it that's bothering you? I never really got a straight answer. Even after I showed her all the evidence that it could benefit her and help diversify her portfolio, she was just not interested. Nope, I don't. It's international. It's foreign. I don't want it. And again, I never really found out what it was that held her back from these international investments. But I was thinking about it. And perhaps maybe it's as simple as at her age, maybe some of her friends and family were lost during World War II. And maybe she sees those investments in those countries in the foreign area as enemies or brings back bad feelings. I mean, I don't know. Maybe. My point here is that we all need to recognize the power of our preconceptions and how that relates to our investments and eventually the outcome of our decisions, which then finally gets us to our eventual financial security. Overconfidence is an issue. Let's go back and let's track. Number one, you got to be in it to win it. You got to be close in proximity to the action. You got to be in the area of what's happening in order to succeed, to give yourself a shot, to give your portfolio the opportunity. That doesn't mean all in, all out. That doesn't mean any of that. It just means you need to be kind of like there. And then figure out from there where you want to be. Number two, this is serious business. You got to be dressing the part. You got to be working with intention and have purpose in what we're doing when we're investing. And finally, we're going to make sure that we're not overconfident, that we're going to check and recheck what we're doing on a regular basis. It doesn't have to be daily, but, you know, every 6 months, every year, every month, whatever it is that we're doing, look at what we're doing. Find the flaws in the logic. Find the areas that actually worked. Learn from them. And then go from there. So I hope these stories had a little bit of insights and help for you. Maybe, you know, I'm just trying to spark some thought and give you something to really chew on because, again, this is the time of the year where we really want to have a little bit of the ability to look within and to set ourselves up because we're always, listen, how many people are gangbusters at the start of, it's a new year, I'm definitely going to do this, And by March, it's like, oh, I forgot all about that. And then you're like, oh, I'm not doing that. And then by the end of the year, you're like, ah, forget it. And then it starts all over again. Yeah, I'm definitely going to find that advisor and work with somebody to get me out of this rut because I can't do it on my own. Or I'm definitely going to go on my own. I'm going to open an account and I'm going to invest the money. And then I'm going to invest in these several stocks. But you know what? You do a few things and then it just kind of falls apart. You have to continue doing it. And if you need somebody to help you hold your hand and mentor you in a way, if you will, coach you or just take over, now is the time to really start thinking about it, to get that into play so that you're in it by the time we roll around to 2021. And by the time we roll around to 2022, 25, 30, 40, and by the time you wake up, all of a sudden you're like, where did those 20 years go that I really could have been doing a better job with my investing? So I'm really pressing you hard here and I'm challenging you. Think about your future. Think about what's in your best interests and make it happen. All right, let's talk about a quick update on markets from last week for a moment as we kind of go through this today. We had a bit of a small dip on major indices. There was some volatility, no question about that last week. A lot of the buy the dip came out. And that was pretty interesting. We saw that on a regular basis through the end of the day. Kind of things fell in overnight and came back up. Small caps led, hitting an all-time high again on the small caps. The tape was dominated by pretty much some big IPOs that may suck some liquidity out of the markets for a little bit, some of the air out of the room, if you will. Next week is a busy week for economics. We had big news over the weekend, a big merger. So we're going to have merger Monday. Can't have vaccine Monday right now necessarily because it happened over the weekend. So I have merger Monday where Britain's AstraZeneca has agreed to buy U.S. drug maker Alexion Pharmaceuticals for about $39 billion in cash and shares, hoping to help their, position them in their immunology and rare disease area. Big premium on this. So that'll probably help the entire biotech sector because many of these names have a lot of cash in the books and there's opportunity out there. We'll also be looking at the market reaction to the Pfizer vaccine news. Of course, stimulus news will also take front and center throughout the day. We're going to see how that goes. It's going to be all over the tape. So that carrot has not been eaten yet. It's still sitting out there. It's getting a little bit soft and moldy, in my opinion. Hopefully they can make a decision. This whole back and forth banter of, oh, we want this. Oh, we want that. Why they can't agree to the baseline items without trying to bring in this limited liability or exclusion from liability and, you know, state bailouts, I just don't understand. Because we all know that there's going to be this Christmas or post-Christmas drop-off of many of the federal unemployment benefits, and that's kind of a big concern. So it's Congress, whatever, it's politics. They're just large juveniles that just can't get it straight. And the politics that we have right now are just ridiculous. Economics, import and export prices next week, early in the week, I think on Tuesday, capacity utilization, important to look at, industrial production. On Wednesday, though, we have some important things. I think one of the more important things that we're going to see right now, considering the fact that last week we had over 800,000 pushed over that mark for initial claims again, retail sales. With the fact that we've seen some of the income come down a bit, more savings happening. What's going to happen with retail sales? That's going to be a big tell on the consumer. We're also going to have the NAHB housing market index on Wednesday, and that's basically the builder's confidence. So that's always important to look at. And we have an FOMC rate decision. Again, I don't think anything's happening there. I don't think there's any expectation. More cheerleading, more rah-rah, sis-boom-bah, go Fed, go Fed, go. This is not going to be, it's going to be pretty boring Fed for some time to come. They may talk about how that $475 billion of excess capital was taken back by the Treasury and the impact on their bond buying programs because of that. But I don't necessarily think there's anything more that's too exciting to really talk about. From that. Initial claims are Thursday, housing starts, building permits as well. And Friday, we have leading indicators. Now, housing starts are kind of important, not as important as maybe new home sales and existing home sales, But the housing market has been an important part of the construction cycle, as well as the fact that obviously employs a lot of people and the periphery of the housing market, not just the building, but the redoing and the remodeling. And then you look at the Sherwin-Williams and the Home Depots and the Lowe's and everybody else that's involved with the lumber prices and with copper and all the building supplies that are involved in all that and concrete, you know, kind of keep going down the list. This is an important part of the economic recovery cycle. And we know that housing prices have been on fire, especially in places like my neck of the woods, Florida, that everybody seems to be leaving. You know, New York and the Northeast coming down this way into Texas. We saw that a couple of companies, Oracle is now relocating to Austin. That was announced over the weekend. And we saw that Tesla is relocating to Texas as well. A lot of moves to Texas. So there's a lot happening in the area of moving, transitioning, and then, of course, the continual saga of what's happening in New York, California, and the city centers that are just suffering so badly. So a lot of interesting things happening over the next few weeks, but interest rates being as low as they are make it very attractive to think about either refinancing. And if you haven't done so, I encourage you to do so. Look for what's out there. You know, you can get 2.5% 30-year right now, I think, right around there. Probably get 2.25% on the 15-year. Probably no points. Don't pay points. Even though they try to push those in and say, no thanks, and moving and tell them you're going somewhere else, they'll probably drop the points. But refinancing is probably a really great deal right now, and that will probably help out your cash flow. So all these little things that you could do end of year, making sure you do some tax harvesting in your portfolio, if you have no idea what that means. Tax loss harvesting, it's a thing that you need to look up and find out more about that. Next week, we have a guest that's coming on board. We're going to be talking about the idea of where people put their money at different ages and where different, we'll say types of people, where men may be putting their money, where women may be putting their money, millennials versus Gen Xers versus, the old codgers. We're kind of, you know, we're married, single, where we're going to be talking about that right here. So make sure to stay tuned. Make sure to subscribe. Make sure to send in a review. If you haven't done a review on iTunes, take a second, just a moment, and put a review in. I look at those and I appreciate those. So we're going to wrap it up here. Thanks for listening to my stories about Papa Milton, Papa Freddie. I didn't even tell you about Nana Ruth or Papa Louie or a little bit about Goldie, but lots of great insights. If you really sit down and sit back for a moment and think about where you got your information, where you got your thoughts from, your educational components of where your notions and preconceived thoughts came from in your life, good stuff to really flush out. And hopefully, again, I gave you some ideas on that. So many great stories with both these guys, but two that really stuck out that I thought would be a good help for you today and really bring you to that next level of becoming a disciplined investor. That's what we're doing here. That's what it's all about. Thanks so much for being here today. I'm going to see you again next week. Nothing discussed in this podcast should be considered a recommendation to buy or sell any security. Past performance is no indication of future results. In addition, the information presented is not intended to be used as a sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should be construed as advice designed to meet the individual needs of any particular investor. Nothing herein constitutes legal, accounting, or tax advice or individually tailored investment advice. Remember, investing involves substantial risk. Past performance is not a guarantee of future results, and a loss of original capital may occur. No one receiving or accessing this information should make any investment decision without first consulting his or her own personal financial advisor and conducting his or her own research and due diligence, including carefully reviewing any applicable prospectuses, press releases, reports, and other public filings of the issuer of any securities being considered. Please consider this for educational purposes only. As always, use your best judgment when investing. Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training. Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz & Company.